Welcome, Dr. James Beckett, Sports Card Insights, the second part of my dueling questions with Joe Orlando. He is an attorney by education, and so he's able to, apparently, as I am, be able to, I'm a math guy, but we're able to fit it into 15 minutes. But we did do more than one segment, and he was a good sport, and he had some great questions for me, and I tried to return the favor. So thanks, especially Heritage, Joe's current employer, but also Huggins and Scott, Panini, Tops, and Upper Deck, Mike Stadium Sports Cards, Burbank Sports Cards, Beckett Media, Beckett Grading, Beckett Authentication, and ComC.com. So hopefully all the sponsors get coverage at some point and patronize them, if you will. So here is another volley of questions back and forth. These are a little more macros about the industry. Joe, a real leader, and so we had a lot of things to talk about. So thanks, Joe, and thanks, listeners. Here it is.
Is there anything you haven't owned that you always wanted to own?
I feel so terrible saying no. Do I have to resign from the hot? I have no grail. I was the underbidder on a Wagner. I was the underbidder on a Lajoie. I talked my buddy out of bidding on the Plank. Those were the big three back in the day. That's not the way I collect. I'm more opportunistic. I was a set collector. And then I got all the sets that people said, these are the sets you got to get of the veteran collectors back in the 70s. But then I started to get color variations for all sets. And I realized that's almost impossible. You're competing with a couple other really crazy people that are going for these obscure colors as well. So that turned out to be not as fruitful. Then I went to collecting the sets autographed. And again, I was single. I guess I had time. But those are very multi-quests. You're always looking for interesting stuff. And then what happened when the company started and I was going to the Nationals and I was not buying stuff from my own collection, but I was buying stuff for the almanacs and the price guides we had and buying type cards. And so if I'd never seen it before, I bought it. And that kind of satiated what you're talking about, to not look for something, but to see it and say, I've never seen that before. That needs to be cataloged. I don't need to buy the whole set. I need to make a listing of the set and then I'm going to buy one of the cards and we'll put it in the books and educate the collectors. Chris Sewell talks about collector, investor, dealer in that order. And I was a collector and I was kind of investor de facto because I was a serious collector. And you can debate whether cards are a good investment, but you cannot debate whether they were a good investment if you got in early. And so now I'm more of a dealer because I'm divesting. So in the divesting mode, I can't even imagine what it would be, Joe. Again, I'm embarrassed to say that. And yet I've got some great cards. I have too many great cards to display them all. So to add another one, am I really going to bump something out? I don't think I am. So I didn't like that question. I'm in a different phase. Yeah. I'm not infinitely wealthy, but I'm wealthy enough that if I really wanted something, I could get it. And so there's nothing that I say, I really want to have this because it's dangerous now. If you really want to have it, people know it, the price can get up pretty high. Okay. You have a law degree and I have a PhD in statistics. And I think those credentials, they can't take them away from you, but it didn't mean I had to be a teacher forever, but I was a professor for a while. I don't know if you practice law, but I feel like those credentials helped me and helped you. And just something you could speak to if somebody's listening to this thinking Mark Zuckerberg didn't even graduate from college and look what he did. But I think to get a good credential that speaks to I'm more analytical. I don't, maybe a wordsmith or whatever attorneys do. You're a good thinker. How did that help you to be very successful?
I love this question. This is a good one. And it caught me off guard. I never practiced law, but I did finish law school. I went straight from law school to PSA immediately, pretty much.
Did they regard that as a positive?
I think so. I think so at the time. No one ever said that out loud to me, but I believe they
It's a mark of distinction.
Yeah. I think in the industry it was. Now, but I have a very clear answer, I think, for anyone listening here, is that if you haven't gone to law school, people think it's all about, it is about writing. Certainly you learn how to, craft, you'll be more articulate, that sort of thing. But really what it is, it's the exercise of looking at a fact pattern, breaking it down, and finding the fastest solution possible. Everything is a time crunch. So most of the exams in law school, you are presented with multiple fact patterns. Your job, it's more like math believe it or not, for those, again, who haven't been to law school, it's more like math than one would think. Every law has a formula to it. So if there's a cause of action, you're looking at the fact pattern, you're breaking it down, you're looking for the little details that signal to you that this could result in assault or a contract dispute, whatever it is. And you have to do it in a pressure cooker. Everything is timed. So being able, I think, to think quickly, to identify a problem, and more importantly, identify a solution to a problem, I would recommend that for any business. It doesn't matter, hobby or not. I think the training, just the mental training, was very helpful to my career. No matter whether I chose to work in the hobby or not, just that constant exercise for the 3 years of law school, I thought, for me, it was invaluable.
You're a confident guy. Do you think that's part of your confidence portfolio compared to the average guy? You've got something they don't have. Most people are intimidated by lawyers.
Wow, that's a hard one to answer. I don't know. I guess I don't see myself as being more than just a sort of a regular, normal guy in that way.
I'm not talking about intimidating as much as confident.
Yeah.
He said, I've done this, I can do this.
Yeah, from that perspective, I think so. Yeah, if you're able to put your mind to something, I don't care if it's sports, I don't care if it's education, anything, a business. And like you said earlier, you can't take that away. You earn that degree. You prove to yourself that you could do something if you stay disciplined enough and committed to whatever the project is. So completely agree there that having those experiences in your early life, I had finished law school in my mid-20s. Yeah, I felt more confident after that. It's a good point, going into the workplace, because I felt like in those 3 years, I put my mind to it and I finished, and now it was on to the next challenge. But yeah, no, I think it does.
You had no desire to be a general counsel.
No, I did not.
Work in that area, even though I think your legal training probably helped you, because there were all kinds of things that came up in our company as well that were not legal challenges as much as lawsuits, even unwarranted lawsuits, but right. Still you've got to deal with it.
Yeah. If you, anyone who's ever run a business or managed a business, guess what? Legal is part of the experience. So yeah, having the training, I think, was helpful throughout my 22 years there for sure.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you sort of a part B to a question I asked earlier. We talked about some of the things in today's market, in today's hobby, that you're not as fond of. What are some of the things you really like about the current state of the hobby compared to where it was before?
In spite of the fact that we have single sport licensees, we've maintained a lot of experimentation within the industry. Experimentation with the card companies and the configuration of sets. And so there's still been creativity there. The auction companies, if they're not just doing business as usual, they're considering other kinds of things. The grading companies have expanded in ways that were not foreseen. Creativity, I hope it never stops, and it hasn't stopped, and that's good. The fact that there's griping sometimes about there's too many of this or too few of this, or we have to do it this way instead of that way, that's part of the dynamic element of it. So I'm not worried about the grousing of it. And the fact that people are overselling it, this criticism of content creators and hobby media influencers, they're overselling what is the greatest hobby in the world. Not a crime. They're not slandering or libeling. They're overselling. They're overpromoting. And yet, they've been right some of the time because people have followed them. And the rules of economics are not mocked forever. Eventually, some things come down to supply and demand. And if demand stays strong, then even something that has a lot of supply can still be. The criticism of base cards. You have a base model of a car. The base model of a car, you don't want that when you see the tricked up one.
Good point.
And you're willing to pay extra. But some people say, no, I just want the base model because it's the same car. I'm getting these other things I don't really want. And so instead of shouting at each other, you're wrong or you're wrong, people were criticizing Fanatics recently because they were doing things similar to what Panini did. And I felt like saying, hey, guys, it's some of the same people that were over there. And now they're bringing this approach to the Topps products that they're working on. Again, I love the experimentation, the innovation. And if that continues, then that's great. And I think it will. I hope it will. Because there's some big bucks being bet on our industry.
Oh, yes.
And I think these are smart people. And as long as they see it as a collectibles category, not a packaged goods category, I like our chances. Okay. I'm going to ask this in a two-pronged way, and I really want to get an answer for both. But I'm not asking who, I'm asking what. What is a major auction company? What is a major grading company? Not who, don't list them. Just say, what does it take to be a major auction company? What does it take to be a major grading company? That level of acceptance, because you've now worked for two industry behemoths that kind of set standards. So what would it take for somebody to have a major grading company, quote unquote, or a major auction company?
I'll take it in reverse order. I'll start with grading and then come to auctions. As it relates to any authentication or grading service, any third-party service, I think to become a quote-unquote major one, I wouldn't call it necessarily universal acceptance because not everyone is always going to agree or support every grading service, but virtually universal accepted. In other words, if you're a grading service and auction houses and dealers across the entire industry will sell your product with confidence, I think that's when you know you've earned your stripes, you've become a major company, and I guess I would call it a brand. That's the difference between just being one of the services and really earning your brand. Now you have become a brand and people ask for you by name in other walks of life, asking for a Kleenex instead of a tissue. I want to PSA this or whatever it is. I'm sorry, I just mentioned the name. But when you do become a recognized brand, then people ask for you by name and it's universally accepted pretty much virtually throughout the industry. From an auction standpoint, I think it's a trickier question. But I would say on the point of brand, I think it's similar. You mentioned it earlier. There are so many different auction platforms. I couldn't even tell you how many there are. There has to be, who knows, hundreds of them. And then, of course, if you throw in giant behemoths such as eBay and so forth, that's a completely different thing. But when you become a brand, when people recognize you by name, regardless of category, I'll actually step outside of our industry here, but in the world of fine art, Christie's and Sotheby's, those are brands. People recognize them. Even if you're not an art collector, my wife isn't a fine art collector, but she knows what Sotheby's and Christie's are. So I think it really comes down to getting to a point where the name of your company is, in fact, a brand within the industry.
When I was asking you that, I do really tie the two together as much as you have. In effect, you're saying that an auction company, if they take cards from a grading company that's not well accepted, it tarnishes their brand.
Yeah.
They've got to be careful. So they're the gatekeepers in some respect, the leading auction companies. They're saying, yes, we can recommend this. So the grading companies really need to get in with the platforms or with the key platforms, because that's the imprimatur, that's the endorsement.
As a matter of fact, you bring up such a good point. I don't think that dealers and auction houses, I know dealers and auction houses are often a target for all sorts of different criticisms, and sometimes it's well-deserved, but I don't think dealers and auction houses get enough credit for representing the product. Because part of an auction house's job, now that I'm on the other side of the fence here at Heritage, yes, we're selling items, we're trying to generate the highest prices possible. There's a lot that goes into that, but part of it is based on the relationship. It's helping guide people when there's no money on the table. If there's no consignment, there's no bid on the table, they're looking for hobby advice. Well, part of the guidance is, like you said, it's who are the companies we're using? Who are we representing to the public? And so I think dealers and auction houses going back decades probably don't get enough credit for being that sort of conduit or that representative. And by the way, educating people as to where, hey, these are some companies that are recognized. We take for granted because we've been in the industry for so long. We just know stuff because we've been around for so long, but there's always a new buyer. There's always a new collector and they don't know. And so I think that's part of the auction house and the dealer's sort of role in their job.
You're pointing out that if a potential consignor came to Heritage and came to you and said, I've got this collection from my grandfather and I'd like you guys to auction it off, if it was presented in slabs that you had not heard of whoever it is that's in doing their slabs, but you'd be hard-pressed not to recommend, we need to reholder these, it's going to be in your best interest. If you've never heard of the grading entity, whatever it is, some three-letter alphabet soup, that if there's any that are not taken yet, wouldn't you have to do that?
Absolutely.
No, so that's optimizing and maximizing.
Right, because optimizing and maximizing, that is our job. When you're dealing with a consignor, you have to give them, based on your expertise and your experience, what you recommend in order to maximize the items. The man in the house of cards.